something very briefly about properly for this occasion. Baby shower. In our sacred scriptures, it describes the importance during this period of time when mother is pregnant. It actually, even before conception, certainly during the period of pregnancy, the soul that's present undergoes different stages of consciousness, according to the scriptures. During the first number of months, a stage of consciousness is called susupti, which means deep sleep. There's a stage just like under anesthesia. When someone is awake, that's one state. When they're sleeping and dreaming, that's another state. When they're under anesthesia, it's another state. Under anesthesia, you don't feel anything. The soul is still there, the soul is conscious, but in a practically dormant state, like a seed, very appropriate, like a seed. Life is there in the seed, but life is not fully manifest. And then, at a certain stage, this one, the soul enters into another stage of consciousness, like when we're dreaming. And when the soul is then born, full consciousness. So, in all three stages, even in the seed stage, nearly awake and fully awake state, or the soul is conscious and spiritual sound vibration acts on the soul. Practically, I understand, is traditional here in Houston, amongst the devotees, to on occasions like this describe the life of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu and Kayadu, his wife. And Hiranyakashipu had many sons. Prahlad was the eldest of those many sons. And Hiranyakashipu was very eager to become God. His reasoning went like this: I'm already in control of all the planetary systems, upper, lower, and middle planetary systems, but so practically I'm God for the time being. But the body is perishable. So if I can just become immortal in this body, then I'm God. Because God is always God. And I'm going to die. For the living being that's born, death is certain. For one that dies, again, birth is certain, described in Bhagavad Gita. So he was, although he was mean-spirited, practically an asura, he was also learned. So he knew the soul will go on, the body is perishable. So he had this desire to become immortal. So he told his wife, I'm going to be going to the forest and I'm going to practice austerities and appeal to Lord Brahma for a benediction that I will become immortal. And Hiranyakashipu, powerful, not only powerful as the military spirit, he was powerful in his austerities. You want another one? Oh, she doesn't even want that one. She wants that one. Okay. So, he went into the forest and raised his arms. Try it sometimes. Stand with your arms raised and stand on just your toes. How long can you stand like that? not very long. You lose your balance. But even if you could keep your balance, like, you know, have something behind your foot and you could somehow keep your balance, how long can you stand on your toes? Your arm, just try with your arms upraised. How long can you stand with your arms upraised? A while. And after some time, your arms get tired. And your feet will get tired. Just put your arms by your side. So anyway, for 100 celestial years, he stood motionless. And there were not only insects crawling on his body, but there were ants that started devouring his body. But because he was so powerful of a mystic, he knew how to circulate his prana, his life air, within the hollow of his bones. So it was just bones standing upright. And there was a big anthill up to his waist, just having devoured his body. So while he was doing that in the forest, word got out amongst the demigods headed by Lord Indra. Hiranyakashipu has left, because Hiranyakashipu had taken over Indra's palace. So he wanted his palace back and wanted his position back as the king of heaven. So with all of the military of the demigods, they rushed upon the palace of Indra being occupied by Hiranyakashipu. And the soldiers of Hiranyakashipu, they fled because the might of the demigods was very strong. And as they were moving through the palace, they found the pregnant wife of Hiranyakashipu. So immediately they had her arrested. And their plan was they were going to keep her under captivity until the Hiranyakashipu Jr. was born. And then their plan was to kill that child. So, as Narada Muni has some very special abilities to know when to show at the right place at the right time and say the right thing, he came upon the scene and confronted Indra and said, "What are you doing? This is a woman. Why are you treating her like this?" He said, "Because this is Hiranyakashipu's wife and she's pregnant and the child that will be born of her will be following the footsteps of Hiranyakashipu. So our plan is not to harm her, but the child." And Narada Muni, just like Vyasadeva spoke about him earlier in the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is so intimately associated with the personality of Godhead that he knew about the child in Kayadu's womb and said, "This is not... He may be Hiranyakashipu's son, but he's a great, great devotee. But please don't harm him. In fact, you can turn Kayadu over to me. I will keep Kayadu in a place where there's Matajis and connected to my ashram." So he brought her to his ashram, and the other ladies that were renunciates that were there, they took care of her. And her nature, although she was married to Hiranyakashipu, her nature was very simple, and she very much appreciated the gentle nature of Narada. She requested Narada for a benediction, and Narada was happy to comply. She said, "As long as my husband remains in the forest, please make an arrangement that my child not be born until he returns." So 100 celestial years, that's a long pregnancy. Kayadu must have been very uncomfortable. What's the time? So Narada gave that benediction. And for that, based on that benediction, although Hiranyakashipu was gone for so long, Prahlad didn't take birth until he returned and Kayadu returned to be with him. And then Prahlad was born. So while Kayadu was in the ashram of Narada, on a daily basis, Narada would speak the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, or message of transcendental knowledge. as the message of pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This was Narada's message. Because Narada's, his, the description of Narada's position is he's directly empowered by the Personality of Godhead to distribute love of God, to distribute bhakti. He's the bearer of the Lord's bhakti shakti, his devotional potency. So Narada's a very special personality. And that was the message that Kayadu heard. But it wasn't only Kayadu who heard. It was the child within the womb of Kayadu. Prahlad, before Prahlad was born, he heard everything. And later on, when Hiranyakashipu returned, Kayadu returned, Prahlad describes that she forgot everything. She forgot everything because she was had so much attachment and affection for her husband. By that association, she forgot the spiritual instructions that she received, but Prahlad didn't. So that later on, when Prahlad was growing up and in the school of the sons of Shukracharya, just as Brihaspati is the priest of the demigods, Shukracharya is the priest of the daityas. And so they went to daitya school, learning how to be nice asuras. So instead of a guru kula, it was an asura kula. And the teachers were the sons of Shukracharya. Sanda and Amarka were their names. And Sanda and Amarka, as teachers will do sometimes, when the teachers, they would leave the classroom and leave the children alone. And what happens when, generally, when teachers leave a classroom and children are left alone?
Oh, we didn't see that.
Bedlam. It's Yahoo! It's party time! Let's play! So the children wanted to play, except for one of them, Prahlad. And Prahlad, being not only a devotee, but he was very naturally a leader, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yad acharati shreshtas tat tat eve karorjana. Whatever the shreshta, the best amongst men does, tat tat eve karorjana, the common people will follow. So even as a small child, Prahlad was a leader. So he got up in front of his classmates and said, let's engage in devotional service to Lord Vishnu. And the kid said, oh, Prahlad, we want to play. We're kids, we want to play. And then he gave a very long explanation of, don't wait until you're older in life and then take up devotional service. But devotional service should be taken up from the very beginning of childhood. A very nice verse, often quoted verse. Komara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavatam iha. Prabhupada spoke on that verse hundreds of times. Komara, it's an age. It's an age when children go to school, generally, in all cultures, around 5 years of age. So, zero or birth up until 5 years is bala. It's like Ram's Leela's Balakanda when he was a small boy. And Kumara is the next age when you go to school. So from that time that one is qualified to go to school, one should immediately, the training in the Gurukula is to engage in devotional service. And we'll go back in time. Before that, in between birth and when one is 5 years old, one should see the example of mother and father of devotional service and hear the message of devotional service and hear the glories of the Personality of Godhead. Anyone who has been around children who, during their early childhood, those early years, they hear stories of Krishna's pastimes. Children are like sponges. They just soak it up, and they just press the button, and they can tell you the whole story, practically verbatim as they heard it. But they want to hear it again, and hear it again, and say it again, and say it again. Over, they don't become tired because of I heard that story, tell me another story. It becomes their favorite story, and then another one is their favorite story. And their life is filled with remembrances of Krishna's pastimes and Ram's pastimes, and they love it. I know some children, they won't go to sleep. They'll go to bed, but they won't go to sleep until their parents read them a story from Krishna book. And then they go to sleep. And when they wake up in the morning, what's on their mind? Krishna. Because whatever you think of when you're resting, naturally, that's the first thing that comes to your mind when you wake in the morning. And so their whole childhood becomes involved in hearing the message of Krishna. But even before then, when the child is still within the womb, or one can even say, especially before then, because not only the emotions of the mother are passed on to the child, but the spiritual consciousness of the mother is passed on to the child. And during that childhood gestation period, very, very significant. What the mother is hearing, as well as the emotions of the mother, it just downloads into the child. Naturally. Especially those things that are on a spiritual level. It's indelibly imprinted within the child. I'll just share one last thing here. Some number of years ago, I had a very critical medical problem, so I went to an Ayurvedic doctor. I searched for some Ayurvedic doctors in India to find one that I felt was... I felt good about it, felt some confidence in. And amongst those that were recommended, I found one that was particularly... I resonated with. And so I took some panchakarma and Ayurvedic treatment. And a couple of years later, it's a husband and wife couple. Both are MDs with degrees in India, and they also have degrees in Ayurveda. And the wife, Smita, had become pregnant, and she asked me from a devotional point of view or a scriptural point of view. From a medical point of view, I know what I'm supposed to do. From a devotional point of view, what should I do? And my advice was two things. One, maximize your hearing of spiritual sound vibration. However you do it, A, B, C, D, pick from a menu, do something that works for you, but hear. And she said, well, I like to read. So I said, okay, read aloud. She said, do you recommend anything? Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam? She said, okay, I've always wanted to understand more deeply Srimad Bhagavatam. So I gave her a Bhagavad Gita. Excuse me. Standard more clearly Bhagavad Gita. So I gave her a Bhagavad Gita. And that was 16 years ago. And I hadn't realized how much time had passed because I was in Bombay for some devotional service at the Arjuna Temple in Bombay. And I went to see the Ayurvedic clinic, and Smita Naram was there. And after doing her pulse reading and recommendation and so on, I asked her, how's your son? And she said, oh, you remember. I said, of course I remember. You named him Krishna. She said, yes, I named him Krishna because I through your association, I became very attracted to Krishna. And she said, you know what, here's his picture. And the teachers all say about him that he's so bright and he's so calm. He's just not like the other children in the classroom. And I smiled because I know why. He said, I have deep faith that that time that I was pregnant and I read Bhagavad Gita 2.5 times, all the verses, all the purports, the Sanskrit, everything, I felt so good. I felt close to Krishna. That's why I named my son Krishna. And I'm convinced that because I didn't just read it, I read it aloud, and that benefit went to my son. Of course, as mother and father, we had something to do with all of this, but the qualities that my son has, they're exceptional, and I believe it's from that hearing that I did when I was pregnant. So, some months left, like Kayadu, and like Dr. Smitandaram, and like other Vaishnavas since the beginning of time, my advice would be that you hear. Read aloud when you're cooking, play recordings of kirtan or Shabda Brahman, spiritual sound vibration, as much as possible. Audible, aloud, not just in your mind. Your mind is also nice, but sound vibration, spiritual sound vibration, as much as possible. And you'll be doing yourself a good service and the child yet to be born a good service. And the other thing that's advised within the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's specific to Bharat Maharaj, and that is, during pregnancy, a woman should not be subjected to, as far as possible, some kind of strong shock or fear or something very startling, because that can result in a miscarriage. The example that's given in the Bharat Maharaj story is when he had completed his rule as king, turned over his kingdom to his sons, and went to the forest to finish his life in devotional practice. One fine morning, he went to the edge of the river to do his morning duties, and he saw on the other side of the river a deer, a pregnant deer, and she was drinking as deer would do, looking this way, that way, drinking some water, looking this way, that way, in a fearful state. And then suddenly there was a loud lion's roar. Probably louder than that. And she became startled, and she jumped. So two things happened. She had a miscarriage. The fawn was born right there on the riverbank. And she jumped. And she jumped into the water, swift-moving water, was carried downstream, made her way to the shore, crawled into a cave, and died. All this in the early morning hours before the eyes of the king. So the king, being the protector of the citizens of his kingdom, naturally went to save the little fawn, because the mother was already gone. There's this little fawn without a mother, without a father, and so the king became the mother and father. But in the commentary it says specifically, during pregnancy a woman should be very careful to not be exposed to some big startling something. So those of you that know something that may be startling, don't tell her. Better just remain peaceful and take care of whatever it is. And your job is remain peaceful and hear spiritual sound vibration as much as possible. Those two things especially from our scriptures. So that's some sharing, just from a devotional perspective. Thank you for inviting us to come and participate in baby shower. I guess what that is, huh? Decorations for the baby shower. Like the cameraman. Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki
jai.
Radha Nila Madhava ki
jai. Hari
Hari. He's holding that Dhammapada Swami Maharaj ki
jai.